Hey, I'm Domenico Montanaro, senior political editor and correspondent here at NPR.
And I'm Danielle Kurtzleben. I cover the presidential campaign. Tonight's debate was kind of a mess at times. Mm-hmm. The candidates talked over each other. They complained about not getting to finish. And a lot of the time, it was just kind of inaudible yelling.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Look, it was definitely not as clarifying as the Nevada debate.
Right.
That debate, we clearly had some clear lines of attacks between certain candidates. We had clear lines of, you know, for example, Elizabeth Warren did quite well as far as progressives saw it in that debate. She wasn't able to capitalize on it because 3/4 of the vote had been banked in Nevada with early voting. This time around, just a total muddle.
Right.
I think there were some people who came with a certain mission, and I think a lot of people, their mission was to attack Bernie Sanders.
Right, yes, because coming out of Nevada, where Bernie Sanders had a decisive win, now, at least nationally, if not in South Carolina, Bernie Sanders is the guy to beat. And the debate kicked off with a question that Bernie Sanders has been facing, which is, how are you going to pay for all of these sweeping plans that you have? Can you pay for all of
these
plans?
Did we figure that out?
No, not entirely. We
I mean, you cover policy. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, listen, so Bernie Sanders last week on 60 Minutes was asked about how can you pay for Medicare for all? And he had an answer that seemed to not waffle, but an answer that didn't satisfy some of his biggest critics in terms of, do you have a set policy list for how all of these things can be paid for?
Well, listen, it's a difficult thing when you're talking about replacing the entire health industry, essentially, and replacing it with, you know, a government-run industry, essentially. So it's a tough thing to do. Anyway, former Vice President Joe Biden, he also clearly came in with a mission. He seemed to me to be the most focused on winning South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
He specifically knew that Bernie Sanders and Tom Steyer were the biggest threats toward him. He went after Sanders when he could on everything that he could think of, and he went after Tom Steyer, landed a pretty hard punch when it came to private prisons and Tom Steyer's ownership. And that's because Tom Steyer has spent $21 million in South Carolina. Specifically, he's trying to target black voters. You've seen his numbers creep up, 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 up. If Biden can keep his numbers down, then he feels like he can squeak out a win. And for his campaign, a win is a win and live to fight another day.
Right. Now, aside from that, voters also saw for the second time former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg on the stage, perhaps trying to resurrect himself after he took a fair bit of a beating from Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren in the last debate.
Filleted, I think, is a word that I used in my preview when it came to non-disclosure agreements and on how women were treated at his company. Now, Elizabeth Warren sort of used some of the same hits.
Right. She hammered that again.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that landed quite as strongly because we'd already heard it.
I wonder about that as well, yeah. I mean, one other thing I want to say about Elizabeth Warren, though, in this debate, is that she also clearly went in trying to at least take something of an aim at Bernie Sanders, who is her...
That was surprising and really fascinating.
Yeah, her big competitor in the quote-unquote progressive lane, insofar as there are lanes in this election. But yeah, she went in saying, listen, I like some of Bernie Sanders' policies. I like many of them, but also I can get things done better than he can.
Yeah, she's trying to make a real effectiveness message for herself. But, you know, I think the thing that really stood out to me, if we take a step back from all of this, they talked a little bit about the coronavirus and what's happening with the stock market and what's happening overseas, mostly with people who've gotten the coronavirus and the fears that are starting to circulate in the United States and in markets across the world. I think it's a reminder that what really determines elections, especially re-elections of presidents, is that backdrop. Is the economy good? Is the country in a hot war? And those environments can change sometimes with something like this.
Yes, they can change very quickly with any sort of a black swan event. If you're talking about a massive virus, a natural disaster that people now, as opposed to in the past, might see as connected to climate change. Or, for example, if the economy starts to tank by November, that could be a huge factor.
I think it's a reminder that every time Democrats try to talk about, like, electability, who's the most electable? Can Bernie Sanders possibly win? Is Joe Biden more electable? Maybe Mike Bloomberg spending all this money, he'd be the most electable one.
Sure.
Here's the fact. If the economy is at 3.5% unemployment and there aren't wars where you see death tolls of American troops, you know, over and over again on nightly news, a president is usually the favorite for re-election. It makes him very difficult to beat. if the opposite is true, you can kind of put up almost anybody and they would have a pretty good shot of winning.
Usually, that said, the one thing I want to add here is that Trump, for as low as unemployment is, his approval really isn't that high. So and also Americans are getting more polarized, more entrenched in their parties. This election may give political scientists something new to chew on for years to come.
I think that's what makes his floor so brittle.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
Well, I'm Domenico Montanaro, senior political editor and correspondent here at NPR.
And I'm Danielle Kurtzleben, political reporter.